And tonight we'll be studying in Judges 6, beginning at about verse 28 in just a moment. We do have visitors with us, and they're very welcome. In our last class, we began our study of Judges 6 and saw that while Israel had had peace for 7 years, verse 1 says they did what was evil in the sight of the Lord. Verses 2 through 5 say the Midianites and their friends, the Amalekites, would come north with too many camels to count, and they would confiscate all the grain carried away, leaving the land looking like a locust plague had stripped the land. Verses 7 to 10 tell us that Israel finally cried out to the Lord, and God reminded them that he had done many things for them through the years by delivering them from slavery in Egypt and giving them the land of Canaan. In verses 11 through 18, we're introduced to Gideon. An angel appears to Gideon and instructs him to deliver Israel from the Midianites. Well, Gideon didn't feel like he was the right person, did he? Since he was from the least family of Manasseh, and he was the youngest person in his father's house. In verses 19 to 24, Gideon sought a sign, and the angel provided when, after Gideon had prepared an offering, the angel touched the offering with the staff and it was consumed by fire. In verse 25, God demands Gideon demonstrate his commitment to God. Gideon was told to use two of his father's bulls to destroy his father, his earthly father, Baal's altar, and the Asherah pole beside it. He took 10 men with him and did as the Lord instructed by tearing down the altar of Baal and the Asherah pole. And then he built an altar to the Lord and offered a burnt offering just as he was instructed. As class was ending, Pax gave us a lesson in agriculture, telling us that those two bulls, one was probably the 7-year-old herd bull, very valuable to the farmer, and the other one might be the young replacement bull that would eventually take the older bull's place. That's about where we got to Sunday morning. Any thoughts on those first 27 verses? Maybe. All right. So in verse 28 through 32, let's read. When the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was torn down, and the Asherah which was beside it was cut down. And the second bull was offered on the altar which had been built. They said to one another, "Who did this thing?" And when they searched about and inquired, they said, "Gideon, the son of Joash, did this thing." Then the men of the city said to Joash, "Bring out your son, that he may die, for he has torn down the altar of Baal, and indeed he has cut down the Asherah which was beside it." But Joash said to all who stood against him, "Will you contend for Baal, or will you deliver him? Whoever will plead for him shall be put to death by morning. If he is a god, let him contend for himself, because someone has torn down his altar." Therefore, on that day, he named him Jerubbabel, that is to say, "Let Baal contend against him, because he had torn down his altar." As we go back and look at this, first, the men of the city had found that their altar had been torn down. The pagan god Baal, the Asherah pole of Baal's consort, had been destroyed. A new altar had been built, and it had been used. An offering had been made. So they determined, after some review, that Gideon is the one that had done this. And they think that since Gideon is guilty, his father should turn him over so they can execute Gideon. I really like how Gideon's father responded. He refused to turn Gideon over. How many of us would willingly turn over our child? He argued that if Baal were a god, he could take care of himself. Sounds fair to me. And as a result of this incident, Gideon receives the name Jerubbabel, which some interpret to say, let Baal contend against him. That's kind of a good beginning for Gideon. Tears down some false altars and worships the true God. Anything you want to add on those first few verses? In verses 33 to 35, then all the Midianites and the Amalekites and the sons of the east assembled themselves, and they crossed over and camped in the valley of Jezreel. So the Spirit of the Lord came upon Gideon, and he blew a trumpet, and the Abrusites were called together to follow him. He sent messengers throughout Manasseh, and they also were called together to follow him. And he sent messengers to Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. In other words, well, first, remember on the map, we said most of these events that we're reading about and as we begin our study of Judges in these first chapters occurred there in the northern part of the country. So the Midianites and the Amalekites are sweeping through the land. They're in this northern area of Israel on their annual raid. And unlike in the past, when it just went on and happened, the Lord instructs Gideon to become a leader, blow his trumpet, to assemble the people. Now, the Abrusites were the descendants of Abiezer, the son of Gilead. Joash and Gideon were members of this clan, which Gideon has described as the weakest in the tribe of Manasseh. He also sent messengers to the rest of the tribe of Manasseh and to the neighboring tribes of Asher and Zebulun and Naphtali. They were all located up in that northern area where these Midianites are attacking or going to attack on their annual trip of raiding the country and confiscating the food and whatever they can lay their hands on. Then in verse 36, Gideon said to God, if you will deliver Israel through me, as you have spoken, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there is dew on the fleece only, and it is dry on all the ground, then I will know that you will deliver through me, as you have spoken. And it was so. When he rose early in the next morning and squeezed the fleece, he drained the dew from the fleece, a bowl full of water. Now Gideon's braver than I am in verse 39. Then Gideon said to God, do not let your anger burn against me that I may speak once more. Please let me make a test once more with the fleece. Let it now be dry only on the fleece, and let there be dew on all the ground. God did so that night, for it was dry only on the fleece, and dew was on the ground. Before Gideon can take any further action, you'll remember that in the early verses of this chapter, the angel told him to be a warrior and to get busy. And he wanted some evidence, and the angel burnt the sacrifice he had made, and he gained some confidence. But apparently he needs to gain more confidence by asking God for reassurance. He certainly is being cautious. So now he prays to God and wants that a sign by asking for dew to fall only on the fleece that's been set out. Verse 38 says, and it was so. God did exactly what Gideon had asked. Then in verse 39, Gideon still needs more reassurance and asks God to not be angry with him, to let Gideon place the fleece out one more time with everything being wet except the fleece. As we can see from these verses, God had more faith in Gideon than Gideon had in God. God strengthened Gideon's fragile faith. He taught Gideon that Gideon could depend on God. God has given us great examples in the scriptures of why we can depend on Him. He sent His Son Christ. We have the evidence of His existence through fulfilled prophecy, eyewitness testimony, the statements of God, the statements of Christ, the passage of time where none of it has been refuted. We have evidence for what we believe. God has given Gideon the evidence. In this chapter, we've met Gideon. We've seen the beginning of his preparation to do the will of God. In the next chapter, the story is going to develop further. What would you like to say in these verses of chapter 6? Pax. You made me think of, Anne, and you that know more about agriculture than I do. What happens with a barrel of apples if you put a rotten apple in there? Will it be good for the rest of the apples? And that's basically what happened with the Israelites. They allowed the occupants of Canaan. They didn't drive them out fully. And over time, the evil ways of the people of the land that they did not drive out caused God's people to compromise and forget God's will, which is what you've just described. Very good. Absolutely. And you're right. The last verse of the fifth chapter, and the land was undisturbed for 40 years. That's all it took for the change to occur. It worked. In our last class, we also looked at this chart and saw that when the Midianites came north, they ended up there in the Jezreel Valley at the foot of the hill of Moreh. And on the other side is the spring of Herod. And that's probably where Gideon's folks ended up. And one more map. You see where the yellow marks are. I'm trying to show you that the terrain is not flat and level. And while our Appalachians and Rockies are much higher elevation-wise than the land of Israel, where all but one mountain, which is over on the Golan Heights side, are under 4,000 feet. Those of you that have hiked in the mountains, whether you've gone up or whether you've come down, if you're carrying a load, you know that the trail is not always easy, especially when you're carrying a lot of gear with you. This is even worse if you're going to be a Midianite fleeing for your life here in just a moment. So as we go to the seventh chapter, the first three verses, then Jerubbabel, that is Gideon, and all the people who were with him rose early and camped beside the spring of Herod. And the camp of Midian was on the north side of them by the hill of Moreh in the valley. The Lord said to Gideon, "The people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into their hands, for Israel would become boastful, saying, 'My own power has delivered me.' Now therefore come, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, 'Whoever is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead.'" So 22,000 people returned, but 10,000 remained. As chapter 7 begins, we see where Gideon is camped, and verse 3 says he has thousands of men ready to fight the Midianites, who are camped across the valley by the hill of Moreh in the valley of Jezreel. And if you go to Judges 8, verse 10, and look at the numbers there, I think that tells us that the Midianites numbered about 135,000 people. However, God's not ready for Gideon to fight them because Gideon's army is too large for Gideon to learn the lesson and the people to learn the lesson that they need to learn. God says Gideon has too many men. And he instructs Gideon to use a provision that Moses had used in Deuteronomy 8, whereby Moses dismissed all the men who were afraid. Deuteronomy 20, verse 8, "Then the officer shall speak further to the people and say, 'Who is the man that is afraid and faint-hearted? Let him depart and return to his house, so they might not make his brothers' hearts melt like his heart.'" God knows that Gideon and the Israelites are going to claim this victory as their own hard work if they have a lot of men. So God is intent on reducing the number of men to the point where there can be no doubt that God is the reason that the Israelites prevailed against 135,000 Midianites and Amalekites. So out of 32,000 people, what does the third verse say? So 22,000 people returned, but 10,000 remained. Yep, a bunch of them were afraid, so they went home. Now, as you look at that slide 4, or the next slide, verse 4, "Then the Lord said to Gideon, 'The people are still too many. Bring them down to the water, and I will test them for you there. Therefore it shall be that he of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. But every one of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go.'" So he brought the people down to the water. And the Lord said to Gideon, "You shall separate everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, as well as everyone who kneels to drink." Now the number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, was 300 men. But all the rest of the people kneeled to drink water. The Lord said to Gideon, "I will deliver you with the 300 men who lapped, and will give the Midianites into your hands. So let all the other people go, each man to his home." So the 300 men took the people's provisions and their trumpets into their hands. And Gideon sent all the other men of Israel, each to his tent, but retained the 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. So as we begin to look at verse 4, God instructs Gideon to use a pretty simple test to see which of the troops should be present for duty. In verse 4, he says Gideon wants to see how these men drink water. I don't know that I could have thought that one up. How about you? So as they start to drink the water, in verse 5, Gideon was told to segregate those who lapped the water as a dog from those who knelt to drink. The lapper scooped up water in the hand and drank. Verse 6 says that the others knelt to drink water. The lappers scooped up water in their hand. Verse 6 says 300 men are the ones that met God's requirements. 9,700 men out of the 10,000 that had remained of the 32,000 Gideon started with initially. The New American Standard says they were sent home. The word home may be better translated place. Let each man go to his place. That would mean they probably, if that's the better translation, returned to their tents and were available to pursue the Midianites when we get down to about verse 23. As we look at verses 7 and 8, the text does not tell us whether or not those who did not kneel were better soldiers than those who knelt. This may have just been a way to reduce the number of troops. In verses 7 and 8, God does assure Gideon that 300 men will be able to defeat the 135,000 Midianites, and God will see that it happens. They'll be prepared to do so. What would you like to say over these first 8 verses? Verse 9. Now the same night it came about that the Lord said to him, "Arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hands. But if you are afraid to go down, go with Purah, your servant, down to the camp. And you will hear what they say, and afterward your hands will be strengthened that you may go down against the camp." So he went with Purah, his servant, down to the outpost of the army that was in the camp. Now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts, and their camels were without number, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. When Gideon came, behold, a man was relating a dream to his friend. And he said, "Behold, I had a dream. A loaf of barley bread was tumbling into the camp of Midian. And it came to the tent and struck it so that it fell, and turned it upside down so that the tent lay flat." Notice, verse 14, his friend replied, "This is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hand." So, as we look at those verses, the same night as when Gideon had reduced the number of troops, God says, "You need to go down and listen at the camp. If you're afraid," and we've seen that Gideon's been hesitant so far, haven't we? "If you're afraid, take your servant Purah with you." Gideon needs to gather some intelligence. God knows this intelligence is going to build up Gideon's courage, if not enthusiasm. Verse 11 tells us that Gideon and his servant did go, and they found there was a huge number of Midianites. And I keep quoting Judges 8:10, where you see that the two numbers, I think, add to about 135,000. That's a lot of people. Gideon heard a Midianite man speak about his dream, where Well, first God says, go listen, the total number. He hears a Midianite man speak about a dream, and that dream gets interpreted by a friend. And the friend says that it means that God has given Midian and all the camp into Gideon's hand. God's providing Gideon knowledge. And at the same time, Gideon must have done something because the Midianites and the Amalekites know Gideon's name. Because his friend said, this is nothing less than the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel. God has given Midian and all the camp into his hand. Throughout this account, we see God providing evidence to Gideon that God is trustworthy. God has given us evidence, the way I mentioned a few moments ago, that his promises to us are real and valid also. In the scripture, we have countless types of evidence that Christ is our Lord and Savior, that he did die on the cross, that he did arise on the third day, that he did conquer death on our behalf, and that he is our King and offers salvation to those who will be obedient to him. He will deliver us from Satan if we will turn to him, rely on him, put our trust on him, in him, and obey him. What do you want to say through verse 14?
Larry?
Yes, ma'am. Well, God has certainly been patient with the angel, with the fleece, example one, with the fleece, example two, with go down and listen to the enemy's comments in the camp. God has certainly been patient with Gideon and built him his and done a lot to build up his personal esteem and preparation to lead the 300 into battle.
Hey, Larry.
Sir.
I was thinking about in 1 Chronicles 11, there's a comments there made about David's mighty men that he fought with for 20 years, I guess, and how they had fought Philistines and the Egyptians and all different ones. But one of them had, who would remember, had fought 300 men by himself. And he was the top of the top general that David had. And these were spectacular warriors, professionally trained professional warriors. That's all they did. Gideon's men, I don't think any of these guys were professional warriors at all. They were other farmers and field hands. And he took 300 of them against 135,000. That's 450 people to one, is what God was asking him to do. And so you take a guy with no weapons of war up against 450 men on average. That's what every one of them had to do. And God said it earlier, his whole point in this was to make sure that they knew who it was who was delivering them, because God wanted them to know that without him as their king and their ruler, their leader, they were completely hopeless. And so that was what he was trying to convey. And that's what you see with all the judges. Later on, when they rejected Samuel, somebody else to go out and perform and be their leader, and this is no different. They're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. But God was their leader, he was their king, and he was their ruler, the one who went out before them and fought their battles, and he was trying to make sure that they understood that.
Yes, he did. And of course, as we're going to see soon, the men didn't have to necessarily fight all 450 individually. God's going to deal with part of them himself. Now, let's see, did we read? Yeah, we read that. How far are we going? 15 through 18. When Gideon heard the account of the dream and its interpretation, he bowed in worship. He returned to the camp of Israel and said, "Arise, for the Lord has given the camp of Midian into your hands." He divided the 300 men into three companies, and he put trumpets and empty pitchers into the hands of all of them with torches inside the pitchers. He said to them, "Look at me and do likewise. And behold, when I come to the outskirts of the camp, do as I do. When I and all who are with me blow the trumpet, then you also blow the trumpets. And all around the camp say, 'For the Lord and for Gideon.'" So we've seen that in verse 15, that when Gideon hears the account of the dream and the interpretation, he worships. He then is going to return to his men. And he instructs them. He's now prepared to move forward. And Gideon is going to give them their instructions for the attack. With this plan of attack, he divides them into three groups, 100 men in each group, three companies. He puts trumpets and empty pitchers and torches inside the pitchers. And each man is equipped and ready to go. They're ready to look to Gideon for a signal as he leads them to the outskirts of the Midianite camp. And once the signal is given, every one of them should shout for the Lord and for Gideon. Now, the word sword does not appear here in verse 18. It does appear in verse 14 and 20. Some translations, King James and New King James, do insert the word in verse 18. Gideon and the men fought with trumpets, empty pitchers, with torches inside, and the effect on the Midianites was they felt surrounded and overwhelmed. Look at verse 19. Well, if I can get there. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just posted the watch. And they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. When the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing, and cried, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Each stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran, crying out as they fled. When they blew 300 trumpets, the Lord set the sword of one against another, even throughout the whole army. And the army fled as far as these long names. And then verse 23, the men of Israel were summoned from Naphtali and Asher and all Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. So this was to take place at the beginning of the middle watch. I'm sorry, Dale's not here to do the pronouncing of the names for me tonight. But the attack was to begin at the beginning of the middle watch. While we often think of the night having four watches, because that's what we read in the New Testament, a couple of sources say in the Old Testament three watches was the norm. The International Bible Encyclopedia says that the night was divided into three watches here in Judges 7, because it's the middle watch that's being discussed. New Testament, Matthew 24:25, Mark 6:48, refer to four watches. Now, we don't know the exact time periods of these. There is a suggestion that maybe the middle watch was 2 hours before midnight and 2 hours after. Regardless, I think the main point when it talks about this middle watch is that it was dark, the camp was settled for the night, and the Midianite folks were not expecting any trouble. So what we find is that Gideon's men do their thing. There in 19th and 20th verses, the three companies of men blow their trumpets, break their pitchers, display their torches, shout a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. And these Midianites are scared. They flee. They think they're surrounded by a superior force. Psalm 83, verse 10, we know the Midianites were defeated at a place called Endor and became fertilizer for the ground. So verse 22 says that when they blew the 300 trumpets, the Midianites panicked. The army fled, and they set the sword of one against another. I think that means that it's dark, and the Midianites start fighting among themselves. And Gideon's men will do their part, but the Midianites destroy many of themselves. Those that remain flee as far as these places to the east and south. As we look at a map, again, the elevation is not flat land. They're coming out of the Valley of Jezreel with the hill of Moreh to the north. They're moving toward the Jordan River. We know that the Jordan River is in a depression, and it sinks from being above sea level in the north to way below sea level in the south. So that valley where the Jordan River lies has elevation changes. And as you look at the yellow arrows, you can see the general path of what those names that are given in that verse seem to indicate that the Midianites followed. Now then, I probably have gone 1 minute past my time. Let me ask, do you have any comments through verse 22, 23, 24 range? We'll come back right here on Sunday morning to these verses and begin again. Thank you for your participation this evening.